The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another edition of The Fighter versus The Writer. I'm your host, as always, Damon Martin. We sit now, the show will come out on October 11th. We are now less than 2 weeks away from one of the biggest fight cards of the entire year. UFC 280 is upon us. We are going to be, talk about a card. UFC 280 is incredibly stacked, of course, led by the title fight at the top, Islam Makhachev against Charles Oliveira, Beneil Dariush, Matush Gamrot. We got Bilal Muhammad taking on Sean Brady. One of my guests today is the UFC bantamweight champion of the world, Aljamain Sterling. He takes on TJ Dillashaw in the co-main event, and I'm very excited to talk to him about that fight and everything else going on in the bantamweight division, including another big fight taking place at UFC 280, which is Sean O'Malley taking on Petr Yan, which is an incredible fight. Could potentially determine the number one contender in the division. Let's not forget, you know, Yan lost a close decision to Aljamain. I thought Aljamain won, but close decision nonetheless. And now he's getting, potential superstar in Sean O'Malley. Big opportunity for Sean O'Malley. If Sean O'Malley can win, I think it's going to be hard to deny him title shot opportunities. And for Petr Yan, this is a chance for him to get a win over a high-profile guy, a guy that everyone has kind of pegged as the next big thing. This is his chance to prove it. So it's a really incredible matchup. So we're going to be talking to Aljamain Sterling here in just a few moments. Also on the show today, it's a brief interview, so I apologize. It's not the lengthiest of interviews, but I am also going to speak a little bit later to Jake Paul. Of course, Jake Paul on October 29th takes on the legend, the UFC legend, Anderson Silva. October 29th, 1 week after UFC 280. He's talking about back-to-back weeks of great fights and big main events. Jake Paul, of course, is kind of the talk of the town, whenever he fights, and now he's taking on by far his toughest opponent to date, a fight that a lot of people thought he wouldn't take. A lot of people said he'll never fight Anderson Silva. That's too tough of a fight. Now he is. He's fighting Anderson Silva on October 29th. So we're going to talk to him about that matchup. We're going to talk a little bit about Floyd Mayweather, and the possibility of Jake getting involved in mixed martial arts. He teased it recently on his own podcast. As I said, it's a short interview. I only had a few minutes with him, but I wanted to play it on the podcast so everyone could hear my conversation with him. But let's kick things off with a conversation I had with the UFC bantamweight champion of the world, Aljamain Sterling, as he prepares to take on TJ Dillashaw in a huge bantamweight title fight at UFC 280. Of course, TJ Dillashaw, the former champion, came back from his two-year suspension from USADA and got a controversial win over Corey Sandhagen. I still stand by the fact that I thought TJ lost that fight. It's not a knock on TJ. Really, it's a compliment to Corey. I thought Corey didn't have to get that win. Close fight. There were close moments, but I thought, if you're scoring the fight, I had a hard time seeing how you scored for TJ, but it is what it is. TJ got the win. Unfortunately, had another knee injury, so it forced him back out of action for another year. He had to wait on the sidelines. He's coming back now, and he's getting the title shot against against Aljamain Sterling. And listen, say what you will about TJ. You can say what you will about his, the allegations of drug use, things like that, beyond the one time he got popped for EPO. Reality is, he is one of the greatest bantamweight champions in UFC history. It's a legacy kind of fight, and that's what Aljamain's getting in this one, even though we can argue all day about whether or not he deserved it. So let's talk right now to the man who will defend his bantamweight title at UFC 280 in Abu Dhabi. This is Aljamain Sterling. He is the UFC bantamweight champion of the world, and it is always my pleasure to catch up with the great Aljamain Sterling. Aljo, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful Tuesday morning, getting ready for training in a little bit, and just another day in the training camp.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and how busy you are with everything going on. Of course, the fight coming up in a matter of weeks. Training looks like it's going well, staying busy. I know this has kind of been the one on your radar for a while, so how excited are you to just get back in there and defend your title again?
I'm real excited. I was hoping for that September card, but it didn't work out. So they pushed it, and here we are getting ready for Abu Dhabi. Just a couple of weeks left, and oops.
Oh. I still got you.
Oh, okay. I thought it didn't get anything.
No, I got you.
Yeah, so we're just a couple of weeks away now from Abu Dhabi, UFC 280. And I'm super excited for the opportunity to fight a guy like TJ Pillashaw. he's been a guy that a lot of people know from way back in the days, being on The Ultimate Fighter and getting knocked out by Dodson and running all the way back to a title run. So it's going to be a good opportunity to kind of to mix it up with a guy like that who's got a long history in the company. And what great way to surpass him in the winning column by beating the guy.
Absolutely. Real quick, I do want to ask, because I know we heard about that September date. Now it's October in Abu Dhabi. Now, don't get me wrong, this Abu Dhabi card is stacked. It's an incredible card, but you also have to travel halfway around the world to do it. Now, I know you've done it before. You've traveled for fights before, but I've never talked to anyone, well, maybe one or two people, who are like, oh yeah, I'm really excited to travel, 19 hours to get to my fight. Was there any oh man, like I got to do that? Was there any of that for you, or you just kind of like roll with the punches?
I kind of rolled with it, but I also had a feeling that it might happen just based on the way everything was, I guess, shaking out. This is going to actually be my first time fighting overseas. So I was kind of excited about doing it, to be honest. I didn't really have too much reservation. The only thing that's really tough is coordinating the hotels and the flights, because I'm actually doing that myself, which it's just a little bit of a pain in the ass because everyone's kind of all over the place, and then it leaves it to me to have to deal with it.
Yeah, I can totally understand. And that's a whole other headache you don't need to deal with when you're, literally getting ready to defend your title.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of brain work. Just trying to coordinate with friends, family, corners. It can become a little bit of work, but I think we got everything. Should be done this week, it seems like.
Yeah. So now we talked right after the Peter Yan fight. And, at that point we talked about who was going to be next. And it seemed like TJ was one of the guys, but I think at the time you said, Aldo was a guy that was on your radar and probably more deserving. And I tended to agree. He was on a 3-fight win streak, had a, good resume. I thought TJ lost to Corey Sandhagen. It's not a knock on TJ. I just thought he lost that fight. And then he's out for another year with a knee injury. And again, he was on the 2-year suspension. And I'm kind of weird about guys getting, title shots in that particular kind of way, I guess, coming off of suspension, getting one kind of controversial win, but it is what it is. Where were you at? Like, I know you're the champ. You're going to fight who they put in front of you, but was TJ Dillashaw was he really the most deserving guy?
I mean, just based on what he's done in the past, not really of anything that he's done lately. I guess he still has a big name and people are still excited to watch him. So I guess this is one of the most weirdest sports when it comes to, I guess, the merit system. We tend not to follow that all the way through. So it's just one of those, what's the biggest fight we can make? And I guess that was the biggest fight that the UFC felt they can make. So TJ got the opportunity to step in there. So here we are. I agree with you. I don't think you deserve to be rewarded with championship pay opportunity after cheating and finally getting caught, not just cheating this one time, finally getting caught from cheating. And he's getting what I think is a great opportunity, you know, because win or lose, he gets paid a lot more than he would have if he was just fighting at a regular pay scale for a normal fight, even if it's main event.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, I do want to circle back. I mentioned Jose Aldo. That was a guy you had mentioned fighting. Of course, we now know Jose has decided to retire. Of course, he fought your friend and teammate, Merab, you know, not that long ago. Can I ask your thoughts on Jose? Like, you know, as a guy that you, I'm sure at some point you've admired him, you know, when you were at bantamweight, he was a featherweight. And I know you said in the past that you always said, hey, Jose Aldo might be, you know, one of the toughest fights for me in this division. You never got the chance to share the cage with him. I don't know if there's any disappointment in that necessarily, but he is a legend, right? Now he's retired, so you know he's kind of out of the way. I will admit, like, that's a bummer. Like, that was a fight I really wanted to see, was you and Aldo. And again, I think he was probably the most deserving. Of course, you know, he lost to Merab, so that kind of knocks him out of contention anyways. But yeah, like, I want to get your thoughts on Aldo, and then now that he's, you know, now that he's gone.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate that he's hanging it up. I mean, but he has had such a long career, so I can imagine that he's just ready to just move on to the next phase of his life and start to just enjoy the fruits of his labor and just enjoy his kids and family and all that. So I get it. It would have been great to compete against a guy like that, but yeah, he came up short. So that it's just one of those things, you know, this division is so stacked, and it's not like it was back in the day where he was the king of the hill, dominating and running through everybody. The times have changed. The skill set has changed and evolved. Everyone has gotten better and grown. And I think it just speaks volumes of where he was at when he came into sport and the direction that the sport is going in. So for a guy like that, it would have been for him to stick around so many different generations and eras of the game, it says a lot. You know, he constantly evolved. He kept up with the times, and he almost had himself another title shot opportunity, maybe if he had gotten a win. But unfortunately, sometimes things don't go in our favor. And he lost to arguably probably the next best guy in this bantamweight division, you know? So, yeah, I just think he had a great career. He has nothing to be ashamed about. He's the most winningest guy, I think, in UFC history, from WEC, and he's forever going to be a staple in this sport. And whenever people talk MMA, you have to bring up Jose Aldo, and that's no easy feat for anybody to achieve.
Absolutely. You mentioned something there, Aljo. I was going to bring it up anyways. You know, I know when Merab was getting ready for his fight with Jose, you know, somebody asked him once again, you know, what about Aljo? And he said, stop asking me this question. We're not going to fight. We're never going to fight. We're best friends. We're close. I wouldn't be here without Aljo. You know, let's just put it in bed. And I applauded him for that. I was like, you know what? Good for you. You know, not that you need my approval, but I was like, that's awesome. You guys are sticking with that. And I know Jake Shields had responded on Twitter and was like, you know, people used to constantly ask him about fighting Nate or Nick Diaz, and I said I never asked that question because I just knew the relationship those guys had was different than the average teammate situation, like, you know, maybe like John Jones and Rashad Evans, a little different than that. And I respect that. Again, you don't need my approval, Aljo, but I respect that you guys have kind of taken that stance, and I'm not asking you about fighting Merab, absolutely not, but I just think that's awesome that you guys have said, let's just stop that conversation because it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with him in terms of he wouldn't be here without me. And I feel like the same vice versa, to have a guy like that who you can train with and lean on and who's super reliable when it comes to giving the extra workouts and just being super selfless in a very selfish sport. It's nice to have. And I think that's what makes us so close, because anything I need, he's there. Anything he needs from me, I'm there. Even when I'm banged up, you know, I'm still letting the guy beat up on me so that he can get the work in that he needs. And I think this goes to show you how well respected we both feel in terms of both of our skill sets. And again, you won't have Aljamain Sterling here without a training partner like Merab, and I don't think you have Merab without the training partner like myself. So I help him with his training camps. He helps me. We go over tape. We bounce ideas off of each other. We both moved to the same block in Las Vegas, you know, so people say, oh, but people can say whatever they want. You obviously never had any real friends, you know, so I think that's pretty much what it comes down to.
Yeah, you said it earlier, and I know it's such a cheesy thing to say, the whole iron sharpens iron thing, but in your opinion, are you training every day with the other best bantamweight in the sport? I don't think that's a stretch to say that.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, right now I'm getting specific looks for the striking department while I'm out here in Vegas. And then when we go back to New York, Marab will jump into the sparring session. So it's just about coordinating and using the tools that you can while you have the opportunity to use it. And fortunately for me, we have a lot of guys out here in Vegas that are happily willing to jump in the sparring sessions and things like that to help drill with me or to give me the sparring rounds and can give me that TJS kind of a look, the switch stancing, showing me the head kicks and things like that, and even a little bit of grappling as well. So it's been cool. So I'm just using the tools while I can. And then when we go back to New York, most of the training will be with Dennis and Marab. So that's the way we have things right now. Maybe we could get a couple more guys in there just to polish off training camp. And I'm just trying to be as methodical as I can, leave no stones unturned, and give myself the best opportunity to win without needing to stick anything up my ass.
You mentioned it there, and I know that there's going to be this big narrative leading into the fight, and you've talked about it, and TJ's responded about the cheating thing, and listen, we all know, I mean, listen, the guy confessed to it, he did it, he got busted, he got his title, you know, he got his title taken away, he got 2 years out of sport, all those kind of things, but, you know, I'm a big believer in once you get busted, you're always going to have that asterisk next to your name. Like, you can't ever outlive that because you have cheated. And that's just the reality of it. And EPO is one of the worst things you can do because it's so hard to catch and, you know, it can affect you in so many different ways. Was there, I mean, again, you're a champion, so you're going to take the fights that are presented in front of you. But was there even a slight hesitation? Like, I don't really want to fight this guy because there are questions. We can't deny there are questions. There are teammates who have accused him of cheating long before he got busted. And now we know he got busted. He was out for 2 years. Now, I don't know if he's still cheating, but you can't help but ask that question.
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't say that I was... I wouldn't say I had reservations for fighting him, but I do have reservations for if he's going to he's going to show up clean. I already made peace with it that I'm going to be fighting a guy that's more than likely... I would say if there's an odds, I would say about 90% that this guy's finding another way to cheat, even if it's some type of microdosing nonsense or however that stuff works. He's willing to put more time into that than it is to just do things the right way. So I already made peace with that there's a chance that I'm going to be fighting a guy who's going to be souped up. And I think a lot of guys I fought in the past have been on some shit anyway. So this isn't going to be any different. The only thing that worries me is that I have to make sure my cardio is going to be more than extraordinary just so that I can keep the pace. Cause I just know that this guy is a little weasel that's going to find any way to get an advantage. He can say whatever he wants, but he knows deep down inside how long he's been doing all that cheating for. And, his teammates outed him. And at the end of the day, it's just going to be the better man is going to win that day. And if he's got to be the better man by using the supplements and all this other stuff, that's on him. I know my hands are clean. And at the end of the day, I'm going to bring the best version of myself, blue collared work ethic. And hopefully that's enough to get the job done.
Yeah, of course, you know the physical advantages that somebody gets from cheating. I mean, we all know that, but I've always heard, and one of the guys, a couple of guys I've talked to about this say, you know, the weakness of using performance-enhancing drugs comes down to a mental crutch. They can't mentally get over the lacking reality of a fight or lacking reality of the physical limitations going into a fight. You know, maybe they're not as good at cardio or maybe they're just not as strong. And so they use something to get them to that physical level. But they say, while it is physical, there's a mental crutch there. And you never get beyond that. Do you believe that's part of it with TJ? Like, that now that he's done it, and we don't know, you know, with 100% absolute certainty how long he's done it, that there is a mental crutch there. And if you go out there and break that guy, you go out there and put your, you know, impose your will on that guy, you can't break him. Also easier, but, like, you know, you can see it in him, because again, I've heard that a million times, guys say it's a mentally weak person who needs to cheat to get better physically, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. So I think there's some chink in the armor there, some room for me to expose some of his shortcomings. And I think mentally he's going to have that in the back of his head. And I think it also does prove that you're a little bit of a mental midget. So if I can get in his head early on, I think he might self-destruct and make it even easier of a night for me.
Do you believe, and I know it doesn't really matter, Aljo, because you're the champ. I mean, you are. And I know you took so much, you took so much burden from that first Jan fight unnecessarily. And absolutely none was your fault, but you came back and you beat Peter Jan. You know, incredible performance. We talked about that. But it feels like there are people who are starting to believe in you more now. Now, there's guys like myself. I'm going to pat myself on the back, Aljo. I've been an Aljo guy for years, and you know that, going all the way back. So you know that. But there's a lot of other people who have become Aljo believers recently. I mean, even a guy like Corey Sandhagen, I talked to him before, and he said, I'm picking Aljamain to beat TJ. And he broke it down and gave the reasons he believes you're going to win. And I've heard that from other fighters. I've heard it from, like, it, again, I know it's not going to be everybody. And you're never going to be completely beloved. That's impossible. Possible in this sport. But do you feel like you have started to turn people around to where they are starting to believe in you? They are starting to see, hey, this guy is really damn good.
You know, I don't know, because I don't really talk to too many guys and asking them their opinion, because I really don't care at the end of the day, because I know what I'm capable of doing and I know the work that I put in, and that's enough for me. So if it's enough to get the job done, it's going to be enough to get the job done. If it's not, it's not, you know. So whether or not people are finally coming around, that's to them. I mean, I have noticed that the what would I call it? The clown emoji gate, I guess that's changed a lot. But in terms of like my peers respecting me or whatever it is, I really don't even tune in for that like at all. So I don't give it a thought. It's really, like, for me, it's just, I like, your opinion really does not matter. It's not going to change how hard I work. It's not going to change what I decide to eat for the day. You know what I mean? So it's all perspective. And I've learned that a long time ago. Like, people are going to bounce around back and forth, and you do something great one day, you're the man. The next day, you don't look as good, and people will write you off. So you got to take it with a grain of salt. I'm thankful that they are starting to realize the hard work that I've put in and everything that I've been saying for the past 13 months leading up to the rematch. But if you needed to see another performance in order to judge where I am at physically and on a skill set basis, then you clearly don't know the sport that well, or you've never watched me fight or train or compete. So the people closest to me, they know. And I know that there's still a lot more room for growth. And hopefully I get to show that on October 22nd, that there's a lot more to the game of Aljamain Sterling than just being the backpack. I got so much more up my sleeve that I can do. And it's just a thing of just getting comfortable in there. And with all the injuries, it's kind of slowed me down a bit. But I'm very positive that this next one's going to just remind the world that, yeah, all the stuff that this guy is saying is more than true. And he's not just out here talking. He's out here walking the walk as well.
Yeah. And I know with the Jan fight, the rematch, because the way the first fight ended, I don't want to say personal, but I know it meant a lot to go out there and have that kind of performance and just put a stamp on it. You know, you got a legally need. You went out there and you went out and won the fight. It was an incredible performance. With TJ Dillashaw, is this one, I won't say more personal, but like, does this mean, I guess every fight means more because it's the next fight, but like, where would you, like, is this as important, even more important because of what TJ has been in terms of like his legacy in the sport, the cheating stuff, we all know that. Like, again, there's a little bit of the, you know, are you facing a guy who's like, you know, trying to come in at 110% as opposed to 100% because maybe he's sticking a needle in his butt, whatever the case may be. Like, is it more personal or is it more meaningful even in this fight just because of who TJ is?
Yeah, it's just because of who TJ is. I think that's the only thing that makes this fight that great. Outside of that, I don't think he's the most deserving guy at this point of his career, of what he's done. But yeah, because of who TJ is, that's really the more exciting part for me. It's like, even for Merab, he stepped in the cage with Jose Aldo. That's like a dream matchup. You know, one day you're watching this guy as a kid, you're growing up, and next thing you know, you're in the cage with him. And it's kind of the same thing for me. I've watched TJ since the beginning of his career in the UFC on The Ultimate Fighter. I got to see this guy's personality. I've got to meet him in person. I know the type of guy he is. And the fact that after all these years, I'm finally getting an opportunity to compete against a guy like that, it shows me what I've done. It shows me that I've now become the guy. And the guy gets to take out the old guy, you know? So it's just one of those young lions meets the new lion. The young lion meets the old lion. And hopefully the young buck gets to take out the old head and show him that there's a new king in town.
Yeah, I love it. Real quick, Aljo, before I get you out of here, you know, we've known for years, everyone always said the lightweight division is the deepest division in the sport. And I always argued it's lightweight and welterweight. I always thought welterweight was incredibly deep, never got the respect it deserves, and has always been a really, you know, great weight class. Of course, for years, George St. Pierre ruled, so it was harder to look at the other guys in the division. Of course, Kamaru Usman was kind of the same way until just recently. But I think bantamweight, you know, bantamweight may now be the best division in sport, if I'm being honest. When you look top to bottom, the prospects, the top guys in the world, yourself being champion, all those kind of things, I really do believe bantamweight may be the best. So can I ask your opinion? A couple other big fights in your division coming up. Of course, one on your card, Peter Yan and Sean O'Malley, kind of came out of left field. No one really saw that one coming. You know, Peter, I actually thought it was going to be Peter and Merab. I thought that's the fight they were going to try to book. Ended up being Peter and O'Malley. Again, potential, you know, title contender fight, depending on how things play out. Can I ask your opinion on that one? Were you surprised to see that match?
I was surprised, but honestly, it's a kind of a win-win for O'Malley. I know he said he's not looking at it like that, but it's a great opportunity stylistically. And I think in a 3-round fight, his chances of winning go up astronomically. I mean, Yan starts slow. If he gets over aggressive like he did against me in that first round and just gets picked apart from the outside and banks on trying to catch you later on, I think that's going to be an ill-advised mistake because O'Malley's good. He's got great footwork. I think he has all the tools needed to win. The only question mark I have for him is the toughness. When Yan actually touches him up a bit and keeps chipping away, will he wilt or will he stay there and compete? You know, so that's my only reservation with that matchup. I just have no idea how he's going to fair when he gets some opposition pushed back at him. We saw it with Chito Vera. He kind of folded. He had a little adversity. I mean, no, it's hard for anyone to fight with a drop foot like that, but I think the way he kind of folded was just very telling of where he's at. But of course, that was a couple years ago. I think he's grown. So it's going to be interesting to see where he's at. And I try to approach this from a cerebral standpoint as best as I can. And try to go into the minds of these guys. You know, I've been in there with Piotr. I know he's going to be there for the entire 15 minutes in your face, looking to touch O'Malley up to the body and chop down his legs until he can get to take off his head. O'Malley is one of those guys who uses a lot of footwork, a lot of finesse, tries to use a lot of feints, touch you up from the outside. He had some tough time with Pedro in that first round. So it just really makes me wonder how well he's going to be able to do with that style when he actually has someone that can mix it up with him and it's not going to be a human punching bag. And I don't know which way that fight's going to go, but if I had to pick, I'm going with Yan. I just think he's a little bit more experienced and he's going to know how to make those adjustments because he's had to have made them before on the biggest stage, which were title fights and 5-round fights.
Yeah, and I know you've said in the past, you know, you may see Yan again down the road. That fight may happen again. But I mean, I got to lie to you, Aljo. You and O'Malley would be a huge fight. I think the UFC knows that. They know that's part of the reason why. I'm sure that's why they put the fight on the same card, because they want to try. You know, if O'Malley wins, they got a star there. And you and O'Malley would be a massive pay-per-view. Let's not lie to ourselves.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, if O'Malley wins, I take out TJ. I'm extremely happy with taking on that matchup. Whichever happens, I'm going to be excited for either opportunity. Obviously, if it's Yan, I'm not going to be so excited. I'm like, we've seen each other twice already for damn near 10 rounds. I think we're good on this one for a little bit longer at least. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I like pay-per-view. I like money. So yeah. Hopefully I keep the belt and hopefully I get to make a lot of it in the next few fights and before I move up to 145 and let Merab just keep wreaking havoc on this division.
Yeah. Is that inevitable? Is the move to 145, you feel that is inevitable?
I do think so. I think it's just getting harder for me to make this weight. Like, even for me to stay consistently under 160 in a training camp is really, really hard. I got to really dial it in these next 2 weeks and start waking up at 155 because that's the next stage. And then I got the next stage of waking up around 152, 150. So it kind of takes away from my training, and I do think it does affect my cardio a bit when I do get there on fight night. But that's why I just try to go as hard as I can in the room, so I'm as prepared as I possibly can be, and hopefully that's enough. So even with the drop off, I can still make up for it, just with the with mental toughness kind of thing.
Yeah. Would you like, though, before you do that, though, would you like to take out a couple more guys, like take out TJ? Henry Cejudo's another guy coming back. I know that's a guy you've always said you would fight. He's one of the only guys who's ever been bantamweight champion, of course, as well. I think Dominic Cruz is out of the running now because, of course, he just lost to Cheeto. So I'm kind of like running down like the big championship level fights you could get. So maybe take out TJ, take out Cejudo, and then maybe at that point, you know, maybe you'll start looking at 145. Is that a couple more fights? Is that kind of what you're thinking, like at 135? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, you know, there's history here for me right now. And if I could run up the score and make it very, very hard for anyone to catch my record, that would be really, really nice. That's kind of where I'm at with my mentality at 135. I just want to win as much as I can, set records, and keep my name in the history books for as long as I possibly can, because the sport's constantly evolving. I mean, we got a kid who's 17 years old making their debut tonight on the Dana White Contender Series, and the kid's pretty damn good. So that's kind of the way I look at things. So I'm just trying to, like, what else am I doing this for? It's obviously to make money, but, you know, to be remembered in history as one of the best guys ever at bantamweight, and to have people be able to study me for years to come, decades to come, that's the new motivation for me.
Yeah, well, there's a great couple legacy fights out there for you. You know what I mean? I love it because you got this one. O'Malley may not be legacy necessarily, but a massive pay-per-view, get you a huge payday. Cejudo would be a big one. So, again, a couple good matchups out there. And then, again, you can go up and hold on to that title long enough to go up and become champ. And then, you know, then you give it up and let Merab go for it. That's my – not that you need my advice, but, like, I think that's how it should go.
Yeah, I'm excited. And obviously, I can always lose this next one. I always play devil's advocate. And then Merab can jump in there, get an opportunity. I'll battle my way back and get a couple more wins at the division. And if it's time for me to go up, it's just time for me to go up, you know. So there's a lot of options, you know. So I'm still relatively young. And that's really the way I'm just approaching it. A day at a time, a fight at a time. And let's just see where life takes me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Aljo, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. Real quick before I get you out, I can ask, who's going to be in the corner in Abu Dhabi? Because I know that is long travel. You mentioned all the booking and everything. Who's going with you at Abu Dhabi?
Same corner as the last time. Merab, Dennis, Ala, Quinta, and Ray Longo.
Okay, good stuff. Good stuff. Well, Aljo, it's always a pleasure. I know you're an incredibly busy person, so I appreciate you always taking the time for me. Have a great rest of your training camp. Safe travels over to Abu Dhabi. Cannot wait to see you back in action in just a couple weeks.
Thanks, brother.
Hey, talk to you soon, okay?
All right.
Bye-bye. Peace.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down, and new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
A big thank you, of course, to Aljamain Sterling, the Funkmaster, for coming on the show. Always great to catch up with him, of course. Now we sit just days away from his next title defense as he prepares to take on TJ Dillashaw in the co-main event at UFC 280. We usually wait and do our UFC 280 preview show the week of the event, but as I'm sure if you haven't caught up, last week we had Anthony Smith on the show, and he actually helped me break down everything at UFC 280. We took on the entire main card with Bilal Muhammad and Sean Brady also stuck in there. So if you missed that episode, go back to last week. We broke down TJ Dillashaw and Aljamain Sterling, as well as Islam Makhachev and Charles Oliveira, Sean Brady, Bilal Muhammad, Peter Yan, Sean O'Malley. And Matush Gamrot, Benil Dariush. So go back and listen to last week's episode. I figure get the jump on everybody else. There's going to be a million preview shows out there talking about UFC 280. Let's kind of jump ahead of people and talk about it last week. So it was great to catch up with Anthony Smith on that last week. This week, of course, talking to the champ, Aljamain Sterling. Right now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's not the longest interview in the world. I had a very brief window of time to talk to Jake Paul. He was in the middle of a kind of a media crazy day, getting ready for his fight with Anderson Silva. Got a call saying, hey, Jake's going to have a little bit of time for you in the afternoon. I jumped on and I got it. So it's a short interview, but I still want to put it on here because, it's always good to hear from the fighters and actually hear their voices versus just reading the words on the page on MMAfighting.com, best website in the world. So let's talk to Jake Paul about Anderson Silva, about Floyd Mayweather, and about his future aspirations, potentially getting involved in mixed martial arts, maybe beyond what he actually might do in the cage. See what I'm talking about. Hear what Jake Paul has to say about it. Jake, I appreciate the time as always. Thank you for doing this. I know you're incredibly busy. Fight coming up around the corner. I know it's such a generic question, but let me ask it anyways. How is everything getting prepared for? What is the biggest challenge of your entire career with Anderson Silva?
It's good, man. You know, this is just my lifestyle now. It's just boxing, nonstop training. It doesn't really even feel like camp anymore. It just feels like this is a part of who I am and what I do. I feel like I've been in camp this whole entire year waiting for fights. So I've had to learn patience, and I'm patiently counting down the days, 24 days away. So we're getting closer and things are heating up, man. I'm excited.
You know, when you fought Ben Askren, you were favored, but I know you took it seriously. When you fought Tyron Woodley twice, you were favored, but you took it very seriously. This is the first time you've been an underdog. Is it a different feeling? Is it a different motivation? Kind of excited that, now this time, people are actually maybe picking against you a little bit and saying this guy's going to beat you and all this. Like, is it a different feeling?
I love it. I love it. It's definitely more motivating. And I love proving people wrong. That's what I'm best at. Quite literally, my whole entire life has just been proving people wrong and feeding off of doubt. And so when I'm put into the position like this, it just motivates me even more. And I think this will be the last fight I'm an underdog. Mark my words, come back to this interview. This will be the last fight of my career where I'm the underdog, 100%.
Anderson Silva is a legend. I've covered his career for many, many years. Incredible boxer. We saw what he did to Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. years ago. He wanted to fight Roy Jones Jr. There's no animosity here, which I appreciate. There's no fake buildup. It's just a really, really good fight. But I know you believe you're going to go out there and knock out Anderson, but what kind of respect do you have for a guy like Anderson, knowing the skills he's going to bring in there and the danger? I mean, let's be honest. He's a legit knockout striker, legit boxer. Like, this is not just a easy fight.
Yeah, you can't mess around with one of the greatest strikers, if not the greatest striker in combat sports history. His hands are, more experienced by far than anyone I've ever been in there with. Combined, so this is not a joke. I don't take him lightly. He has knockout power. He beat a former world champion, like you said. And, knowing the risk and being okay with it is what I'm doing with this fight. And I'm letting it motivate me versus letting it scare me. And even my brother was like, hey, are you sure you're ready for this? And the answer to him was yes. I know what I'm capable of. I will have to fight a perfect fight. And that is not an easy thing to do. But if I can go in there, fight a perfect fight, stick to the game plan, I believe my power will come out on top and I will be able to catch him and knock him out.
Jake, so much of the build up to your fights has been, I was at your fight in Cleveland. It was so much fun. We know there was real animosity there with Woodley. Obviously, you and Tyron have kind of squashed the beef. He was on your podcast recently, but you know, it was fun. You have that build up. You have that kind of personality, but this time around, a lot of respect, you know, no, there's no fake build up, no fake beef, you know, Anderson, incredibly nice guy. Is it a different feeling? Have you been able to change your demeanor in terms of getting ready for a guy like this who is just about respect? It's just about the challenge. There's no bad blood. There's no animosity. So it's a little different than what you dealt with Askren and particularly Tyron. Well, even Nate Robinson was talking trash.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a change of pace, but it's kind of refreshing. And I don't mind it at all. I have a ton of respect for Anderson. Obviously, he was my idol growing up. Took a picture with him, first celebrity I ever met. So it's kind of crazy that we're here today. You couldn't really write this in a movie. So it's refreshing, and I like how things are going. And I think it's almost more entertaining. You know, even our press conference was just so outlandish and so different. So I try not to read too much into it, though. I think a lot of people are like, oh, is he trying to play mind games with you and be nice? And like, no, you know, we're fighters at the end of the day. And when the bell rings and you get punched in the face, all that friendly shit goes out the window.
Yeah. Jake, we know that at the end of the day, combat sports in general, this is prize fighting. You are out there to win a prize, to make money and provide for your family and do all those kind of things. And if you went from Anderson Silva and you immediately jumped in the ring with KSI and got paid a huge payday to do it, I'd say good for you. I don't care. Good for you. Go out and make that money. But I know your goals in this sport go beyond those kind of influencer fights, so to speak. That's why you fought Ben Askren. That's why you fought Tyron Woodley twice. That's why you're fighting Anderson Silva. Knowing what Anderson Silva brings into this fight and everything goes well on October 29th, do you feel like that this is kind of like the graduation fight? Like there's no going back from here. There's no more. I know like the KSI fight was one you talked about, but KSI has openly said like he's not ready for you. So at this point, like Floyd Mayweather's one you mentioned, like that's really fun. Obviously, there's other pro boxers. You tried to fight Tommy Fury. You tried to fight Haseem Rockman. Both those guys backed out. Not your fault. But do you feel like beating Anderson Silva, that's it? Like there's no going back from here.
Yeah, no, this opens the floodgates to a lot of competition, a lot of call-outs, a lot bigger fights. So it's exciting. However, you know, if someone's talking shit at the end of the day and I can step in there and knock them out and make a ton of money, like you said, it's prize fighting. So if KSI wants to volunteer for his own death, then, you know, I'm not going to be the one to tell him no. But my level of opposition will just continue to raise. And that's what I've done, you know, throughout my career is each fight, it gets harder and harder and harder and harder. And I encounter a new test. And that's what I have to do. No one's going to tune into my fights if I'm fighting someone that they think I'm just going to beat. I don't want to put on fights like that. I, you know, and you saw KSI do it. He fought two guys and one. It was the cheesiest, stupidest thing. It was such a waste of everyone's time and money. And I have a responsibility to my fans to put on really big fights that are wars with really good matchups. And that's what I'm going to continue to do.
Do you believe in your heart of hearts that a guy like Floyd Mayweather would actually fight you? Because Floyd, listen, I'm not going to fault him for making money to fight, you know, guys that are completely overmatched and probably shouldn't be in there with him. Listen, you fought Deji early in your career, you knocked him out, and credit to him coming back and getting a win in his last fight. But I mean, come on, let's be honest. This is a win-win situation for Floyd. He's going to make money and the danger is not really that inherent. It's different with you because you've become a legitimate boxer. In your heart of hearts, do you believe he'd ever actually take that fight?
I think he would if it was an exhibition for sure. The thing is that I want it to be a real pro bout and take his undefeated record, which I don't think he'll risk. But I think that just makes the fight three times as big, three times as hype. So that's what I'm aiming for. But I definitely think there is a fight for us in the future, whether it's exhibition or not. You know, we'll figure that part out.
Yeah. Last question for you, Jake. You mentioned on your podcast that you have something coming in MMA. Of course, I'm the MMA guy here asking this question. You said you have something coming in MMA. Now, we know you've talked about this before. So here's what I'm going to ask you. You talked about, you know, also fighting. When you say also fighting, Is there any chance, and I've heard rumors, please feel free to shoot me down if I'm wrong here, is there a chance that Jake Paul becomes an owner or a part owner of a promotion?
Hey man, all I'm gonna say is this, because I can't say too much, but this is what I'm gonna do. That's all so I can give up right now. That's the only information I can give you.
I just feel like I may not be wrong is all I'm saying, Jake. I feel like I may not be wrong on this one.
Hey, you're a smart guy, man. You're a smart guy. We all know that. We all love MMAfighting.com, bro. Shout out to you. You know, you're one of the people I follow most in the industry. So really love you and love everything you promote and talk about. So you're a smart guy, bro. You know what you're doing.
Well, Jake, I appreciate the time. Best of luck on October 29th. You know I'll be watching. And thank you for the time. I really appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you, Damon.
Bye-bye. A big thank you, of course, to Jake Paul. It is always a pleasure to catch up with him. Of course, October 29th, he takes on Anderson the Spider Silva in the main event on Showtime pay-per-view. Of course, the card also going to feature former UFC fighter Uriah Hall, who's coming out of, technically he's not coming out of, he's coming out of retirement from MMA. He's not fighting MMA again, but he's actually going out there and fighting Le'Veon Bell. Former Pittsburgh Steeler, teams he played for? Jets, I think? Anyways, he's boxing now. Of course, he got the win over Adrian Peterson on that Social Gloves card a couple months back. So now he's going to be taking on Uriah Hall. Chris Avila taking on Dr. Mike, a guy that is a, kind of a YouTube, Instagram celebrity. Now he's crossing over and doing boxing. So interesting card. A lot of eyeballs going to be on it. And of course, the main event being Jake Paul against Anderson Silva. So very much looking forward to that. Want to say a big thank you to both Jake and Aljamain for coming on the show. Of course, Aljamain has his title fight coming up in a matter of days as he prepares to take on TJ Dillashaw. And of course, we will have more guests and more interviews coming up next week on the show. We already did our UFC 280 preview, as I mentioned earlier in the show. If you missed that, go back to last week's episode as we talked to Anthony Smith about that. We broke down the entire card and gave our picks and predictions for the main fights on UFC 280. It's a stat card. It's an afternoon card. Don't forget, 10 a.m. start time for the prelims, 2 p.m. start time for the pay-per-view from Abu Dhabi. So an early afternoon card for the UFC on October 22nd. So make sure you're here for that. I want to say a big thank you, of course, to everyone that tunes in each and every week to the Fighter versus the Writer. Check us out on all of your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course you can always find us over on MMAfighting.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.